Hello, loves. Today's podcast is about doing a little more good, which leads to a lot more good. It's myself with Zach Berman and Dean Morris, known as the Juice Truck Guys. I was super excited to have this conversation because they are great entrepreneurs based in Vancouver. Of course, we're going to talk about love. We're going to talk about what it means to manifest and embody love. And they got me to cry, which, you know, is always a good sign of a deep connection. We hit some notes about forgiveness and going to church and conformity and nonconformity and total pleasure to go really deep and have a profound, true friendship conversation with Zach Berman and Dean Morris. A little more good on With Love, Danielle.
All right. Well, welcome back to another episode of A Little More Good. We are very excited to be joined today by the one and only Danielle Laporte. Thank you so much for making time to be with us today.
It's so fun to like be with locals.
Yeah.
It's great. I feel like we're a little bit related, you know, because like podcasting and local doesn't often go together, but here we are.
Here we are.
Yes, we can commiserate and celebrate about the same things.
Yeah. And I wanted to say, like, I'm so happy for your success. Like, I remember, like, Juice Truck, just, like, Gas Town, and you didn't even have the right cups when you first started. Like, all the things, you know? And now storefront, and it's really great. You're making it.
Amazing. Thank you. I appreciate that so much, Danielle. I've been learning from your work for a long time, so it's such an honor to be able to connect and share a conversation with you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Same. I think finding ways to be a better version of myself is always something that I'm drawn to. Learning how to level up or, you know, continue to pursue the things in my life that have served me so well. And obviously a theme that you talk on a lot is love. And so focusing and just kind of like doing some prep and getting ready to have this conversation with you today, immersing myself in this culture of seeing love, self-love, love for others, the world around us. It's just been such a net positive that even with the pouring rain today, I'm like, you know what? It's not such a bad world out there. Things are all right.
You're such a Vancouver entrepreneur, net positive. We got it. Love works.
Yes.
The bottom line. Yeah, the ROI on love is pretty good. Yeah.
So good. Yeah. So one of the things in kind of, you know, diving into all things Danielle Laporte, one of the things that really, really stood out to me, you've posted it on your website and recently shared a reel about it. And it's this fun experiment. And I actually, Zach and I are both parents. I have two girls and I know that they would absolutely love to do this. And I want to do this with them is the Apple experiment. And I just thought in terms of bringing us into this conversation, this is such a kind of fun, lighthearted, but really profound way to start. So can you share with us the story of the Apple experiment and then even some of the significance behind it that maybe you've learned or how that shaped the work that you do?
Yeah. Okay. The story, and then I'll give everybody like the actual how-to. The story is, I can't even remember where I learned to like do it with an apple. But of course, this is based on Dr. Emoto's work. He's since passed, where they did experiments working with water and speaking directly into different water sources or ice or snowflakes, and then looking at how the vibration of that word spoken to the liquid changed the configuration of the liquid. And you look at it under a microscope, and all the water sources where there were positive, what anybody would consider positive words, love, happiness, wellness, all those things. The sources that received that water, you just saw this cohesion and this symmetry. It's just like perfectly happy snowflakes under the microscope. Whereas the water or the ice that got the negative words, you know, fill in the blank, really fractured, you know, just kind of torn apart, incohesive look to it. So there's something to this. And then considering that, depending who you talk to, human beings are made of 60 to 80% water. Some people feel that women are made of more water. We certainly produce more water with childbirth, et cetera. Then it matters what we are saying to ourselves internally, silently, and out loud. This gets into philosophy around prayer and incantation. And then just like, I really love this idea, just as being a writer and the power of, I feel like there's a a universe in each word. Like, you know what? It's not despair. It's hopelessness. Look it up. There's a difference. You know, I'm not talking about kindness. I'm talking about divine love. There's a difference. Like, I love word economy. Love splitting hairs. Okay. So you get into the vibe. So this is what my kid and I did. Now this was about 10 years ago. He's about to turn 19, like in a couple weeks. And out of all the things I've done, like, you know, deep, substantial stuff on consciousness, love, it's the Apple experiment that like has gone the most quote viral, overused word. But so this is what we did. One apple cut in two, put it in separate jars. And we just put saran wrap coverings on each jar, or you could just do a mason jar. Don't need water. You can put them anywhere you want. Put them in the dark, put them on your windowsill. And then you're going to speak loving words into one of the apples. So we left it in the kitchen. Every time we go by, we pick it up and just say, you're beautiful. You're lovely. We're cheering you on. You're so perfect, right? And then to the other apple, you basically talk smack. And now this is what happens with spiritual women on the path. They're just like, I can't do it. I'm so empathic. I cannot talk shit to this apple. So to those people who I know, because I was the same way, like my kid, you know, he was 9. He loved it. He's like, you dirty, no good, nasty apple, you know? And I couldn't bring myself to do it. But you can say things like, you're decaying, you're dying, you're just programming the apple. And what we found, and now hundreds and hundreds of people, and they're all DMing me, and every time I do this, I get the Instagram stories, you will find that the apple that you were speaking negative words into rots exponentially faster than the happy apple. Now, some people talk about doing this with rice, two different containers of rice. Some people say they just post, they just use sticky notes or some kind of label, and they just label the jars and they have the same result, which is, that's really extra amazing. So just imagine, you know, and then that brings us to like how to be loving.
Yes. Yes.
Which is like such a janky, you know, way to get there. But I really feel I'm down for the power of words, but I talk a lot these days about tone, the words we choose and the tone. Yeah.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Like, to me, it's no wonder that, like, in some ways that experiment, as, yeah, kind of like silly and whatever as it is the thing that has got so much traction. But I think because people look at it, they go like, no way. And in some ways, yeah, it seems so shocking. Like, that's impossible. But then when you sit with it and think about your own experiences as a human being, and we can all go back and replay the moments where there were words of love and affection and affirmation and positively spoken to us and over us. And we can recollect those feelings. And then likewise, we can go back and look and remember times when things were spoken to us that were harmful, hurtful, negative, deleterious. And we're like, oh man, that made me feel this way. So like the experience, we don't need an apple. We can just look within. But I think that the apple is kind of this way that really right in front of us in short order shows the dramatic effect that our words and the intentions behind them can have on the people and even objects around us.
It's the sweetest lesson in the universal principle that everything is energy. Yeah. Because once you get that, once you even start, you just play with it. I mean, you get lots of doubters who are just like, well, was the knife dirty when you cut the eye? It's like, none of that matters. It works. Okay. You know, it's almost like this backdoor entry to realizing everything's energy. What am I holding in my body? What am I thinking when I walk into the room? What's my, I feel all communication begins with some intention. We want to be seen. We want to be heard. We want to be helpful. We want to be right. We want to affirm that we're wrong, whatever it is. So it's like you ask yourself your intention. That intention is the energy that you are showing up with. And it has an effect. Yeah.
Well, just reflecting on that and all of the self-talk we have, you know, if we're saying negative things to ourselves or are not believing in ourselves, like we become that rotten apple, you know, like our thoughts can decay what's possible, or they can kind of elevate what's possible. So thinking about inwardly and outwardly, the words and the intentions, and maybe we can kind of jump into, you know, the bigger concept of love and how powerful it can be. I love what you said when you describe love is not a feeling. Because when I first heard you say this, it kind of struck me, because I thought about my first experiences with love as like a teenage boy, where it was just like, you know, blind feeling, where I would be kind of cut off from any logic or common sense, just kind of one track, like obsession, kind of teenage boy romance. But when you say love is not a feeling, can you get into your own evolution of love and where your first concept of love was and what that understanding is now?
Well, I've been swimming in the water, the philosophical water, for a long time, that like love is the stuff we're made of. Love is the truth. Love is the fabric of the universe. And I got that conceptually. That led me to really looking at things as a trifecta, as a trinity, because I'm, you know, these last few years I've been really interested in like, well, if we're made of love, if source, if God is in everything, then what about all the darkness and the challenge? And what about all the actual evil that's happening on the planet? You know, it's been going on for centuries. What I've come to, we're going to like go really high and then we can go back to apples if you want.
Yeah.
Is in the beginning, there's the word. The word is God. But in the beginning, I feel like there was light, the light of consciousness, the light of love. And from that, you have both light and you have dark. So there is light. There is life source. There is goodness, even in the dark, gritty, horrific things that happen. Like life is still animating what's going on. It's just the darkness, that density, is our own ignorance seeing itself as separate. Like, I'm not part of this loving fabric. I'm something small and individual and unsupported. And then all these gnarly behaviors come from that perception that we're separate. You know, that's us being cast out. What happens when you're cast out? You're the sinner, you're doing no good, and it's just all downhill from there. The redemption is that like the darkness wakes up, like the darkness realizes like, oh, I'm from the same source. And that's when it becomes conscious of its power. And, you know, there's love in everything. I don't know. That was a long way around the barn. I can't even remember the original question.
I think just like touching
on. Yeah. I need beet juice right now. Yeah.
Coming your way soon.
Yeah. Just like the evolution of love and how, you know, we can come from a place of understanding of what it might be like a feeling to more of like a whole body awareness. And I really like what you said, where it's kind of like we can wake up to this idea of what love is, and that really it's at the center of everything. And you have this line that's great. It's an invitation that we're here to awaken our divine nature and interconnectedness. And you touched on that idea of we're not isolated, insular beings. Like no person is an island unto themselves, and yet we are all connected. And in some ways, the fabric that weaves us together is this concept, this idea that we call love. But really, it's like that fundamental, foundational energy, source, God, whatever it might be.
I think what is easier to understand is that what connects us is that we all come from the same source. You don't have to even believe in a higher source. You can just use your intellect. It's like we all got here the same way. Mm. And you can pull that out as far as you want. The reason I believe that love is foundational and it's not a feeling is because feelings come and go. And I can be loving no matter what mood I'm in. I can be having a terrible day. I can be having a blood sugar issue. I can be in an argument, and I can still be aware that I can say the loving thing, that I can remember why we fell in love. I can still be open to receiving love. It's like, just like it's ever present. It's always accessible. It feels very atmospheric. It's always there. Mm-hmm. It's just, and you know, this is how I begin how to be loving is, you know, I'm saying your heart is always open, actually. It's our thinking that has us believe otherwise. Like you are born receptive. You are spacious. You can accommodate your bad mood and your partner's bad mood and the brilliance of your team and the failings of everybody. You that big, my goodness, of course. It's the mind that comes in and says superior, inferior, right, wrong. You're bringing the past into your present. It's just a mind game that separates us. And I feel that to hold the belief that love is the basis and my heart is actually open and I just need to remove a few thought forms in my way, you know, some stinking thinking, that for me feels like half the journey. Just like, oh, sorry, I forgot that I was love. I'm just going to get back to it. I'm going to change my tone. I'm going to have a pleasant memory about us before this argument. This is how I know I'm loving. This is how I know I'm enlightened. I don't say the thing. Don't say the thing. You want to say the thing. And this is what's so tricky about the wellness space, right? Is we've all read a couple relationship books. Maybe we've gone to a couple workshops, you know? And we say the thing on behalf of a loving relationship. I want to, you know, we want to have intimacy. We want to move it forward. I want to connect. So I'm going to let my partner know how they could be better. Mm. It's just an ego trick of like, I'm going to show you how right I am so that we can improve the relationship. My experience is that is just shadowy bullshit. And that more often than not, the love thing to do is not say the thing.
Mm. One thing that I learned from you that I appreciate is choosing loving thoughts. It's a simple rewire when I'm stuck in maybe a negative mood or angry or upset about something, choosing loving thoughts. I'll think about my two boys or something that kind of rewires love into my brain. And it's amazing how quick your mood and your outlook can change when you choose loving thoughts.
Yeah.
Can you kind of allude on that a little bit?
I think there's some characteristics to loving thoughts. You have to believe it. So you can't be bullshitting yourself. And maybe like the best loving thought you can come up with is other people have gotten through this. I can get through it too. Maybe you're not capable that day of like, I am healing, I am divine. It's just too big for you. Fine, you can't believe that. Just believe I'm capable of healing. And that's your loving thought. It's like just a little notch up on the frequency, you know? A loving thought is not rebellious. So you see this a lot in the body positivity movement where it's kind of like, I am so sexy. And it's this kind of pushback. Look, everybody should believe and feel and maybe even declare they're sexy, they're beautiful, as is, absolutely. But if there's this force, this kind of proving with the loving thought, it's actually coming from your unhealed self, which is just going to create more ego and stuff. But if you can come from that whole place of yourself of like, I am so beautiful, and just find the one thing that you can believe in that day about your beauty. And then I also think there's a characteristic of there's some kind of universality to it. It's like if it's loving for you, it's probably loving for a lot of other people. And the practice of this, one has to know that you might have 900 negative, unloving, critical thoughts a day. You're going to have to try and have 901 loving thoughts. And that the ego mind is so strong, the wound itself is so strong. You might be riding high and feeling all sorts of like really legit, positive, cohesive things about yourself. And one customer can walk into your store and just hit you the wrong way. Or you can just get one text and you get thrown off. And you're just going to have to choose the next most loving thought. and be the good apple. Yeah.
Be the good apple.
Yeah.
So if we're struggling, you know, sometimes it's hard to get out of bed, or it's hard to, you know, take action. We can be stuck in a rut or a dark place. What are some starting places? Like, you've talked about shame as a starting place. Can you kind of allude to if we're stuck in negativity or in our shadow or depression, what are some first steps we can get to get back to self-love and being love?
What if you didn't try to get out of the rut?
Let's talk about that.
What if you just stayed in bed without any guilt?
Yes.
And my experience is, when I hit those slumps, if I just, you know, it's like steering in snow, just steer into the curve, right? It's just like, if I go with the slump of like, oh, my body, my mind, I'm going to stay in bed. I'm going to read. I'm going to do all the things I'm not supposed to do. I'm not going to go to yoga. I'm probably going to have some gluten-free mac and cheese and it's going to be great. And if I do that, but this is the catch. If I do it without criticism and I'm really soft with it, the next day I am up. I'm just like, wow, that was actually a recharge. And I get everything I wanted to get done the next day. And I feel like, you know, the light has come to Vancouver. It's the times when I'm in two places at once. I'm like, I'm in the slump and I'm criticizing myself. I should be more enlightened. I should be further along. This isn't what spirituality looks like. Oh, then it's rough. But if I do want to get out of it, I have to have no criticism for being in it. And then I have to use my free will to take the hard step. So the wound wants to stay wounded. The hard step is, we all know, it's the hard step is getting out the door to get to the yoga class. And then it's all good. And then I have to remind myself that my only job, this is actually, I find this really liberating. My only job is to create conditions of healing for my life. And I want to serve and I want to be goodwill and I want to make a difference for lots of people. But if I start with me, I'm actually less of a burden on the social system. I'm way more fun to be around. And I might be able to say something useful in a podcast because I created conditions of healing for myself this morning or yesterday. So what's going to be healing in that, in the slump? And the answer changes slump to slump, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. I think that there needs to be more permission given to slump because we're in such a fast paced production results based society that when we can't get out of bed and do all of the things that everyone expects us to do, the immediate feeling is I failed to be a good person today. I failed to show up for my team or my family or my business or whatever it is. And therefore I have failed. But if we start to reframe and say, no, the thing that you need to show up to first and foremost is yourself and look after yourself, because if you are depleted, you are not going to be a help to all of those other people around you. And I think, people like you are doing this work that help bring awareness to that reality that, like, it's okay to slump. And what if the first thought wasn't like, how do I get out of this? But was like, okay, let me be here for a minute and be present in this and see, like, what is it going to show me? What is it going to teach me? Am I trying to do too much all at once? And am I on the verge of burnout or whatever it might be? But what are some ways that you would invite people to live into the slump, so to speak? Like, obviously the first step is like giving permission, but what are some ways that people might be able to embody and embrace those times that we typically are told, like, yeah, you know, push through, persevere. And what would be like the opposite messaging of like, love yourself, do these things?
Two things. One is inner child work and the other is the antidote. So can we talk about inner child?
Please.
Yeah. Okay. Inner child is a great term for your unhealed self. All sorts of things happened throughout our childhood that impacted us. Go to therapy, work it out. Yes. Inner child is such an effective term because whenever we say it, there's this kind of this softening. We all know what it's like to be a loving you know, grown up to a little person. And you know, in my darkest period of my life, which was, of course, my greatest learning, which, of course, I don't want to ever go through again. It was all about inner child work, working with my psychotherapist, who had me write down 5 things every morning that I was going to do that day. That was going to be my medicine. And she said to me, Danielle, your whole day has to be geared around the wound. And I was like, my whole day? Like, I'm a grown up. I want to get back to my life. I don't want to be in this dark place. She's like, this isn't going to last. So this is another thing. The slump is not, it's not just okay to be in a slump. You are going to slump. This is life. It's like saying, oh, it's okay that it's winter. Winter's going to come. Like, this is nature. This is life happening. It's okay. It's good. It's unavoidable. So I would write things down. They had to be the most gentle thing. Gentle is medicine. Gentle, gentle, gentle. My list one was text Shayla. That's all I was up for. My nervous system was so shot. I couldn't listen to music. I couldn't do TV. I did leave the house. This is love. I did leave the house for a Def Leppard concert with my son. My nervous system was shot. Like, this is my ultimate mothering act. I was like, oh my God, I'm having panic attacks, but let's go. Cause I got you tickets. You know, we had to leave early, but text a friend, lay on the floor. That was actually, let's just lay down on the living room floor, do nothing. I mean, that's Shavasana. Take a bath, take a nap, eat some peaches. And that was incredibly powerful. I didn't need to go to another workshop. I didn't need to confess any sins. I didn't need to work something out with a parent. Gentle, gentle, gentle. And every time I have this conversation about inner child and someone says, oh my gosh, I talked to my inner child this morning before this meeting. And all my inner child wants is water and to go to the park. It is always that simple. Yeah. And then I said something else that was wise at the time, but has escaped me. Inner child, and it's okay. Oh, we covered it. Yeah, got it.
Amazing. I love that acceptance of nature. You know, we don't get, I mean, maybe we do get resentful of the seasons as we're talking about the rain in Vancouver here, but we know that winter's coming, and after winter, there'll be spring and there'll be rebirth. And after that, we'll kind of reap the benefits in summer, and then we'll go through it all again. So understanding that is beautiful. Even with ourselves, like the more listening to the Daniel Laportes of the world and all of these people that I look up to as kind of like the modern elders of wisdom, like the modern, I don't mean like elder in age, but the people that are
thank you for clarifying
for passing down wisdom and teachings and that sort of thing. There's a consistency that it's not all roses, you know. There is struggle and there is darkness to go with love, to go with celebration, to go with achievement. There is that kind of ebb and flow of achievement and a struggle. And it's not, we kind of see the celebration of all the achievements on Instagram all the time, but it's not the case of reality. So to get these reminders, I think are profound and something that we can walk away with knowing that this too is a season. How do you reflect on that when you're in the spring season, when you're in harvest season in abundance? Like, is there a way to be mindful of that and to be practice gratitude during that, knowing that there could be winter coming again? What's kind of an awareness practice for spring?
Make hay while the sun shines.
Like, yes.
Yeah. Ride it like you stole it. That's how I feel about happiness.
Amazing.
I do have like a bit of an apocalyptic doom part of me that just like, this isn't going to last. Like, I found this when I fell in love with my current partner who, like, you know, we're in it for life now. And within the first few months, I was just like, I love you so much. You're going to die. It was just, you know, and it actually became a thing. Like, I started to experience some legit anxiety around it. And I had to reach out again to my psychotherapists, plural. And I just like, you know, I'm like this self-aware woman. This man's incredible. And all I can think about is him dying. And I'm actually, I could clock it. Like he would leave my place and within 90 minutes, I could actually feel this sense of anxiety. And what I learned was I felt safe to finally feel that anxiety that was under the surface. It was always there. The relationship was just kind of the doorway into being able to clean up the stuff in my own basement. And I think that's another thing to keep in mind in terms of seasons. Like, you know, I have the conversation often about, especially people who are like into, you know, into personal growth. Why am I getting that lesson again? Like, I thought I really forgave. I did the workshop, you know, like we're in Vancouver. So like I did Landmark. I worked for Lululemon. Yes. And I worked this out. I got over my racket. I think what happens is the soul gives us the lesson when we have like the emotional, spiritual infrastructure to take that lesson. Like there's some things, if I would have gotten them years ago, it would have really messed me up. I would have been in the psych ward. And then there's some lessons I get now. It's like, I have enough money in the bank. I could take a bit of time off if I want. I have tools. I know how to breathe. I know how to meditate. I have a community to support me through this. And if you look at it that way, then you're not as critical on yourself when the same lesson comes up again. You're just like, oh, I'm bigger and I can go deeper now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, in some ways it makes sense hearing you say that because we're kind of hardwired to live and react and be a certain way. And that may or may not always serve us positively. So like even just thinking through my own life, like knowing, and as I feel like in the last few years, I've really started to see my life in like new eyes where I'm like, oh, these are the things that I'm not the best version of myself when I live this way. And it's like, wow, it took me long enough to figure it out. But then I still will create a life scenario where I do to myself, you know, the things with whether it's hurry and busyness and back to back kind of stuff where I know that that doesn't serve me, but I also have this bent towards like FOMO and wanting to say yes to everything and do it all. I don't know if you've done Enneagram work, but
Are you a seven?
I'm a seven. Yes.
Totally.
Right. The full enthusiast, like say yes now, ask questions later.
I know you sevens. I love it. You could be like, do you want to go skydiving? Naked at 7 a.m. and you guys are like, yes, I'm there.
Yes. I'd be like, wait, let me check. Do I have anything that day? Like, yeah. I know it's crazy. Yeah. And so, but realizing that that makes my life so full and so beautiful, but at the same time in like dysregulation, those things that give me life will also like take it from me. And it's like, how come I have to keep learning this lesson? But like, that's who I am. And so I found forgiveness for myself to say, yeah, of course I'm going to keep learning this lesson because this is how I live. But it's learning it a little bit, you know, less dramatically perhaps each time.
Hey, I just want to talk to you about the reason you're here on the planet, which is to heal. And we heal by living heart-centered lives. And we live heart-centered lives by being more reflective. And there are tools for that. And I have vetted a lot of them and I have bundled them up and I put them into a monthly membership called Heart-Centered. You get to choose the adventure, the esoteric adventure that works for you, for healing, for refuge, for coming home. DanielleLaporte.com/heart-centered. Compassion softens all those edges. So you don't need the whack, the 2x4 lesson. You're just like, you just need to be late one more time. You're like, fewer things scheduled instead of, you know, getting fired or whatever it is. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We get more finely tuned and it takes less of a whack to grab our attention and be like, oh yeah, this is not how I want to be living, but it's still that lesson. And so I love that you said, you know, creating space and graciousness for yourself to be like, why do I have to keep learning this lesson? Well, probably because we're going to need it, like to keep us on the path to where we go. And kudos to you for paying attention and hearing the lesson. That means something.
I think in any given lifetime, you have really 3 to 5 themes. It's the same lesson over and over again. And there's really good news in that, which is It's not a lot. It's going to be repetitive, but you're going to master it. And you really get to focus. So just do those, whatever your thing is. Neglect, abandonment, jealousy. It's going to be your thing probably 100 years. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, you've talked about the spiritual practice of like focusing on the beautiful and focusing on what's good. And so the flip side of that is knowing, you know, these weaknesses or these things that we will struggle with or come up against, but not making that the focus, right? Like you tell the pilot, don't hit the mountain and they will fly towards the mountain, but you say, hey, fly to the open space and they'll fly to the open space, right? It's what we fixate on is the thing that we'll move towards. And I love how you talk about that, saying let's focus on what's beautiful rather than the scarcity or the fear. Can you unpack that a little bit more just in the theme of this conversation?
The first time I really got this was in therapy, actually, where I saw this, he's still a good friend, refers to himself as a Jubu, Jewish Buddhist. And I, you know, it was expensive. So I was expecting like some deep methodology. And I walked into his office and he just shrugged and said, so what's working? I was like, what? Like all your PhDs and like, that's it. And it really is it. And then I would hear it from shamans. It's like, Danielle, a strong mind focuses forward. Strong mind focus. We bend so we do not break. And I just, that's it. And that's, I know that my lesson is, because I'm a four on the Enneagram. So we will always find the reason to be melancholy. We love the shadow. I love talking about suffering because I'm so interested. I'm so committed to getting out of suffering for humanity. I want to talk about it all day. And also if four walks into the room, you want to have a four on your team because we're always like, here's what's wrong. Here's what needs to improve. But it can be a downer. So my lesson is what's working? How are we the same? What's the gift here? Like, there's no spiritual bypass there for me. Like, I know what's wrong. I just want to find the gift. And then I've learned a lot about this, just basic romance counseling and all the things. It's just like, praise him, praise your man. And it's just, you know what? That's not a masculine, feminine thing. Just praise the child, praise yourself. I think so many of us have so many critical mind tapes on rewind over and over again about why we're not enough of this, that, or the other. And then my experience has been, so this is also like mystically backed, but this is lived for me, is that whatever isn't working, if I focus on what's working, whatever isn't working starts to dissolve. Whether it's the shitty relationship pattern where you're always picking on the same thing, don't pick on that. Focus on this. And the little thing, they stop doing it. I stop doing the thing that contributes to the thing. And I think the practice of, you know, quote, always be seeing the beauty is you being a creator with a capital create. You see it all and you're going to focus on that. And I walk through this sequence and how to be loving about love, light, and power. Because you hear this so much in the wellness space of like love and light. And I'm down with that. I've signed a lot of emails, love and light. But like love is our consciousness. Love is our true nature. It's our original self. It's our substance. If I point my true self, my real self, my genuineness in a particular direction, it turns into light. I'm being conscious of who I am, of who you are, and I'm giving you the benefit of my consciousness. So love given is light. And then power, I mean, real power is just like, I just want to do that all the time. Yeah.
Imagine all these apples that we can be preserving just with all of this loving intention, you know?
Johnny Appleseed of love. Imagine all the juice you would get.
There we go. There we go. I mean, that's how we juice. We just put all the love into intention into each bottle. So just to pivot things a little bit before we wrap up, a popular theme is manifestation, you know, wanting to create and live in the best life that we can. And you talk about manifestation as a technology. Can you tell us about manifestation as a technology?
Yeah. I have to give a preface. Not anybody can manifest just anything all the time. We have limitations, duality, all that. There's things. I do believe that every single person on the planet can feel deeply fulfilled, connected, loved, and blessed. Okay, so there's that. Because, you know, and that's really my way of taking smack out of all the manifestations workshops are just like, you know, 10 steps to everything you want in 21 days. And just like, wow. That's actually delusional to think that you can create anything you want. But we can create a lot of amazing things. And I believe in miracles. So I'm all for miracle thinking. This is the basic technology of manifesting. You come up with a vision. You get sensual with that vision. You can see it. You feel, you close your eyes, you feel it. You're sitting, you're standing on the podium. You smell the air. The sun is shining, right? All right. So you're entraining all of your energy bodies and your psychology into this. And you're really sending a signal out to the energy field that this is happening. I'm just going to walk into it. It's like Carl Jung said, you know, you throw the dream out in front of you. And you just walk towards it. You have to treat it like it's a seed. So one reason we don't get what we want that's, you know, gettable is we just like have a bucket list or we do a vision board one weekend and it was like totally powerful and we leave it. Well, that's not how gardening works. You have to attend to it. So we attend to it with our attention. You sit with that vision every day. You go for a walk on the seawall. You see it, you feel it, you smell it, you give thanks, it's happened. You're just trusting. You don't have to keep checking to see if it's cooked. Just leave the stove closed. The universe is baking it for you, right? So anybody can do that. We all know people or we've been that person. We use the tool, we had the vision, we manifested it. It doesn't mean we're manifesting from the heart. And this is what I'm really interested in. Doesn't mean we have a vision that's aligned with higher purpose and soul. Because we all know people who manifested the car and the bucks and the company, and they still are broken. And they're doing it because they just want their dad to say, son, you're a success. I'm proud of you. So the wounded self, the ego self can manifest just as well as the healed self, the heart can manifest. And what I'm interested in is heart-centered manifesting, where we use the technology and it's inclusive. So imagine everybody having vision boards where instead of just in addition to having photos of, you know, you on the altar getting married or the podium or this, the stack of cash, you had photos of green forests and the Amazon in lushness again, or happy neighborhoods. And the trick here, this is what I want to add. Do all that manifesting technology and then ask yourself how your fulfillment, you getting that, is going to benefit other people. You can still have the car. You can still want to make your first six figures, although not everyone wants to be a billionaire, which is so gross. You can still want to meet your soulmate, all those things. But on behalf of the collective, like when I'm in love, I'm going to be of more service to people. When I have this fast car, I'll be happier, I'll be healthy, I'll be able to give more money away, whatever it is. You've got to include other people in the vision of your happiness, ideally.
Yeah, that's... That's so beautiful. It comes back to that idea of all of our interconnectedness and that what's good for me ought to be good for for the rest of us, and how can I use my privilege and gain and the things that I've, you know, orchestrated or manifested into my life to help those around me. And that's just a far more, again, coming back on these themes of like beauty, that's a far more beautiful picture than like, I want a nice house, the car, the loaded bank account, and, you know, tropical vacations. Like, those things in and of themselves aren't bad or wrong, but they fall short of a more holistic and beautiful vision for everything and everyone.
And if we're creating happy, healthy communities, you know, we're creating these pockets of blue zones that are regenerative and sustainable for, you know, our generation and future generations to kind of create an ecosystem of happiness and possibility. So I love including that kind of global or community sense to our manifestation instead of just making it all about the me, the I.
And I've had I wrote a book about goal setting. And so I've had so many conversations about what happened when you crushed it and you got there and you slay there. And, you know, it's staggering how many people set the goal, they nailed it, and we're just like, meh. But the goals that come from this, like, synthesized vision, the fulfillment is so much, it's different. It's actual fulfillment. And I noticed that ego-centered goals, when you pull it off, there's still this striving. It's like, got it. You don't feel the sense of fulfillment. You actually kind of lose sleep that night because you're like, what's the next thing? Whereas the heart-centered goal setting, when you get there, there is actually this deeper relaxation of just like, I'm here. We did it. There is a sense of celebration. And the next vision, the next goal, because yeah, let's keep expanding, comes from that sense of satisfaction. So you're baking satisfaction into your future. It's very quantum, guys. Yes. Very quantum.
Well, yeah. I was just thinking, you know, I mean, it kind of like maybe a little bit cheekily, but maybe not, is like the billionaires that I can think of off the top of my head, most of them were probably ego-driven. And if you ask them today, like, are you truly, deeply, at your true, like, most authentic, honest version of yourself satisfied with your life right now? Probably most of them are billionaires because the answer is no.
Yes. Well, I think their minds have been so hijacked, they would say yes, but it's delusional. And right. What's so sad is those of the billion-dollar stature, at least the ones we know of, because there are many in the 1%. What do we know about, you know, what are they known for? Just the billions, not like they could all end poverty. They could all clean up the drinking water for Indigenous Canadians and in Flint, Michigan. Like, that is not where this is headed. They're, you know, we could go on. They're trying to get us off the planet. Why don't we fix the one we have?
Yeah. Yeah. I've said before, when Jeff Bezos from Amazon did his venture into space, there was an online petition that went around that you could sign that was like petition, worldwide petition to not let him back. I may or may not have added my email. I submitted
my email. No re-entry.
Yeah. But. maybe as we draw towards a close, I'd love to end speaking of, you know, what's often thought of like otherworldly stuff. And I've heard even in this conversation today, kind of snippets of deep spirituality, and I would even say like eclectic spirituality that you've shared. You know, I've worked for a number of years in like church circles and have done the work in ministry as like a pastor, and have kind of been someone who's always seen as a bit of a black sheep in terms of the way I walked and worked in that space. But I heard you mention, you know, in the beginning was the word, this John 1 verse, and the logos or the logic, this speaking of God, or one of my favorite theologians, Rob Bell, says words create worlds. And I feel like that's something that you would resonate with. But you can take this in any direction you'd like, but I'm really curious as to know, and we love to go spiritual on this podcast, it's like, what is your relationship with God or the divine or source? What does that look like? And how does that inform your act of self-love and love towards others?
Well, I find even the question really moving. Yeah, it just gets to like that, gets to my core. It's a lot better than it used to be. So, and I still struggle with this because this is one of my, you know, 3 to 5 themes. This life is a kind of a punitive ideology that if I don't get it right, I will be punished. And so I replaced Catholicism with the New Age, where I just like, well, it's not, you know, it's not this God deity that'll punish me. It's my karma that will get me. And that really had me like striving and just like excessive spiritual practice. Like one more meditation, a longer meditation. I'm going to pray. Everything had to be a prayer. I'm going to pray. What prayer am I going to do around the seawall while I'm doing dishes? All the things, you know. And it's still really a thing. Not as extreme as it used to be. It's created this, at one time I'd say it at its height, really had this inner battlefield. And the battlefield, I realized, was a homecoming. Where, I don't know, maybe I need juice, but I'm feeling really teary about this today. I realize that God doesn't want, not only does God not want to punish me, but like, I am the beloved. You know, I'd say like the other theme is for me is like punitive and abandonment. And the healing is to realize like, God is not only not punitive, God is for me. Life is designed to support me, to not to keep me more than alive, just but to God, life is for my thriving. And I've had some deep experiences of realizing that the divine actually wants my pain. I'm not alone. And it was, I'll give you the nutshell version, but just like a revelation that there was this pain that my psychotherapist couldn't get to, or the guy I was seeing, or my best friends. No one could just really scratch that itch. And I just like, I think I have to give it to God. And I noticed that I felt unworthy. Like I felt like I had to put a bow on my suffering. I had to dress it up before I handed it over to get some relief, you know? And I just kind of rolled the dice and I was like, I got to give this to you because I don't know where else I'm going to give it to you. I'm on my knees. Take the suffering. And it was very clear to me that I don't know if I heard something or, but it's just like, I've been waiting for you to give me this pain. And I rejoice in receiving this pain. I can transmute that. And so my relationship to God is very much like my relationship as a mother to my child. And I feel this has been the greatest gift of parenting. There's been so much like great music and guitar and all those things. But I know that Source loves me the way I love my child, much more perfectly and impeccably. But if I could, I would take my child's pain. You know, like we all, who wouldn't, you know, they come to you and you're just like, oh, if I could take your cold, I would take your cold. If I could take what they said on the school, I would take it. And it gives me joy to do that. It's my job. I like it more than anything is my power to transmute suffering into revelation and love. And the final note on this is I now am very much better at grammar and seeing God in everything. So it's become much less, he has become much less localized for me. And just, I see God now more as like shimmers in water and in your toque, which only the Canadians will understand. And in my suffering and the relationship and all the things, just like, it's all God. And it gives me more to rely on, less to cling to, because no deity is going to save me, but more to lean on. Thank you for asking.
Of course. Yeah. Thank you. That was beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. And it resonates deeply for sure. Yeah.
I love that part about, relating it to your own experience as a parent. Cause I think that rings true whether you're a parent of a child or you have an animal. You know, if you have, if you're the caretaker of, you know, an animal or a person, of course we would take their suffering. You know, if I see one of my sons in pain, I would do anything to take their suffering. I suffer because I want them not to suffer. You know, I would take that in a minute. So I think kind of taking that micro lens and going as macro as the experience of God is just so beautiful and profound. So thank you for that. And just extreme gratitude and appreciation for your time today and just for the work that you create in the world. All of your books are incredible, and the lessons and teachings are deep and lifelong. And I look forward to continuing to follow your podcast and your writings and just wherever your path is taking you. Before we let you go, we do have one question that we ask all of our guests, and I'll let Dean kind of close things out here for this conversation.
I love these, the classic closer. Okay.
It's the closer. And it's related to the podcast itself. Like Zach and I, when we started this creative endeavor, we were like, what do we want to do? Like, why start a podcast? And we wanted to have inspiring and meaningful conversation with people like yourself, who is just, you know, they're up to cool stuff in the world and making a meaningful impact. And we were out on a run one day, and Zach, like, what if we called it A Little More Good? Because that's kind of like what we want to do in the world. We want to create that in our own lives and share that. And so that was the name. It just stuck, and we knew, like, yes, this is it. But we always love to hear from our guests, like, what does that phrase, that sentence, what does that mean to you, A Little More Good?
Yeah, everything. Like, that's the spiritual journey. Just a little more good today. A little more good in the conversation. A little more good in my relationship to spirit, body, food. A little more good. And keep going. We want to get struck by lightning sometimes. We want everything to turn around, the 10 steps, the answer. We're like, so want the answer that's going to fix everything. And really, evolution, this is it. True power, the real stuff, is about a little more good. Adds up.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Danielle. We so appreciate you, and look forward to future conversations together.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thank you. This is delightful.
Thank you so much for listening, for feeling, for spreading the word with love.